A month ago, I got to travel to Manicotic to help one of the school's teachers, take a bow, Mrs. O'Sullivan, with conducting a hunter education class. She and several other Southwest Region School District teachers took the Hunter Ed Instructor course in October, and the next step for each of them was to teach the class to kids in conjunction with a fully certified hunter education instructor. That's where I came in. So, I got to go over for a couple of days and share in the classroom and range day activities with Mrs. O'Sullivan and the six students who took the class as a part of the district's E-Week activities, E-Week being short for Exploration Week. I often oversimplify, purposed as humor, my answers to how things go. In this instance, when my colleagues asked how the class went, I responded, "No one got shot." Fact is, each of those six kids did a stellar job, both during the classroom portion and also during the range day. One conversation that came up a couple of times while I was there centered on ptarmigan, more specifically on population numbers. A few years back, there were ptarmigan everywhere, or so it seemed. The last couple of years, well, not so much. The kids wondered why. Animal populations are something a lot of people have an interest in, because those populations often affect our success, or lack thereof, when we get out and try to fill our freezers. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Animal populations seem like a pretty decent target out in front of the Alaska Migratory Bird Calendar Contest, which will be getting underway in the coming weeks. I say that because this year's theme is Birds Bouncing Back, Conservation Works, with an obvious focus on migratory birds and the fact that conservation efforts can have a positive impact on those birds. There's a handful of species rattling around in my brain, some birds, some not birds, and some in Alaska and some not, that we might consider as we think about how populations can go up and down. Let's start off with a species that did not bounce back, though in fairness, it was never afforded that opportunity, the passenger pigeon. This is a great species to consider because it's relatively contemporary, having gone extinct just a little over a century ago. Also, the sheer numbers this species once embodied is a sobering, cautionary tale for those who think that any species is beyond such danger. At one time, it is believed that passenger pigeons once constituted up to 40% of the total bird population of the United States. When European colonization first began, the total population might have exceeded 5 billion birds. And yet the last one died, in a zoo, in 1914. Their downfall, it is believed, was a toxic combination of overhunting, a failed survival strategy, at least where humans are concerned, and absolutely no conservation efforts to put the brakes on what was a cratering population in the late 1800s. There was a huge commercial market for the birds, as they were said to be terrific table fare, so hunters slaughtered them until there were no more. It was as simple as that. It's very much a real-life parallel to what happens in the Lorax with the truffula trees. Again, it staggers the mind to accept that there are no more. A single nesting site in Wisconsin, during the mid-1800s, was reported to have covered 850 square miles with a nesting population of almost 1.5 million birds, according to a leading ornithologist at the time. And today, not a single living bird is left. And what of those ptarmigan that we talked about in Manicotic? I remember hunting over around Manicotic in 2012, and it had a passenger pigeon feel to me. There were days when it seemed like the alders and willows were covered in birds for miles. Where did those birds go? From what I've read and heard, it's not a simple answer, or even a very clear one. It's possible the birds are still there. I've heard guys who should know say that those weak winters we had perhaps allowed the birds to stay up high and out of reach, rather than pushing them down lower, where they were more accessible. Also, ptarmigan numbers have always been a flighty thing, pun intended, and they are known for boom or bust swings. The exact causes for those peaks and valleys is not really very well understood. In Iceland, there is some evidence for a 10-year cycle, something like with hares, but it's nothing that's been proven here. Perhaps this winter, if it sets up as a real winter, will provide some answers as to whether they are here or perhaps numbers are actually down. I did hear on KDLG a few weeks back that there were more that were seen during aerial caribou and moose surveys. So if you like to hunt ptarmigan, perhaps things may be on the upswing. Whereas ptarmigan numbers and the ups and downs of those numbers is not completely understood, there is a long-standing, well-documented knowledge where snowshoe hares are concerned. Hares undergo a 10-year cycle, and this cycle has been documented in different areas going back hundreds of years. It's as predictable here in Alaska as the snow, perhaps more so given our lack of snow in recent years. Every 10 years, give or take a year or two, the hare population hits a peak that often results in ridiculous numbers, and then those numbers just fall off a cliff, resulting in a valley of a couple of years. An interesting tie to that is that lynx numbers follow hare numbers in the same 10-year cycle, whereas lynx rely so heavily on hares as a food source. The cycle is the same for lynx populations, though they lag a year or so behind. What it comes down to for lynx is that when there are low hare numbers, less lynx young are born and fewer survive than during years of hare abundance. I'm not quite sure where we're at in that cycle, but I'd guess it's climbing towards a peak. The reason I say that is back in either 2010 or 2011, I don't remember which, snowshoe hare numbers were just crazy high around the area. I can remember hunting trips for hares where the numbers just staggered the imagination. At least they did mine. So maybe we can hope for climbing numbers of several species of small game this winter. Taking it back in the direction of the less well-known or understood, we might consider a species with a lot of value to a lot of people all across our state, the caribou. Caribou also can experience some rather stark fluctuations in their populations, and a number of factors can be responsible, including changes to habitat, climate, predation, human influences, density-dependent factors, insects, parasites, diseases, and competition with other species. Often it's not a single factor, but several that trigger a population crash, of which several have been seen in recent years. When I lived in an area village in the 90s, the Mulchatna herd was legendary, in size and for the size of trophy animals it produced. It was frequently featured in hunting magazines. I have said on here before that I didn't know anything about caribou biology back then, but it never occurred to me that I wouldn't fill my 5 tags. There were just too many animals. I've heard since that the population was maybe something like 225,000 animals, or possibly more. Within a decade, though, it had plummeted, and I think the estimate now is something like 25,000 to 30,000 animals. A similar decline is going on with the Western Arctic herd, which had been around 500,000 strong a little over a decade ago. Now it's below 200,000 and continuing to spiral. Closer to home, our refuge resident herd, the Nushagak herd, albeit a much smaller sample group, had grown too large, and in recent years efforts to reduce it to a target number involved an increased push for subsistence hunting. The herd is now a lot closer to the size biologists believe will allow the herd to be the most successful in years to come. Again, there's usually not one single factor that causes a herd's decline, but a combination of factors. Also, caribou herds historically have shown times of decline, but have also later rebounded. So that's certainly the hope for the Mulchatna and Western Arctic herds. More of a success story of recent years is the continued expansion and growth of moose populations across the Togiak Refuge area. There continue to be more moose and moose in areas where moose have not previously been. Animals in general need food, water, shelter, and space to both survive and thrive. For refuge moose, that's been one of the keys. They have those things right now, and the result is an expanding, growing population. It's probable that growth will slow, but for the moment, there are hunting opportunities happening in places that didn't historically have those opportunities. And then there are some animals that just seem to prosper no matter what. Two species that come to mind are the white-tailed deer and coyotes. Even as urban sprawl is oozing its way across so many parts of the lower 48, the deer and coyotes just continue to abound, and often in those very areas of urban sprawl. It's probably been a decade or so ago that I read that it's estimated there are more deer in Texas alone right now than existed across all of North America when Europeans first came to the continent. They have become an unwanted pest in many suburban areas, opening up hunting opportunities at the behest of non-hunting individuals who otherwise might not approve of hunting. The idea of cute little Bambi-like animals is a nice idea to some, until it becomes personal. With deer chewing down expensive shrubs to mere nubs and causing insurance rates to skyrocket because damages done by deer car collisions. Coyotes are also on a skyrocketing uprise and have adapted well to urban settings. Do a Google search sometime. There is a fast-growing number of negative coyote-human interactions. Why? Because the coyotes are being found more and more in close proximity to people. It's to be expected some level of conflict will happen. I am pretty much out of time, and we didn't even get to talk about populations such as fish or waterfowl. Hooray for the success of the emperor goose numbers continuing to grow. At the end of it all, and this really isn't a nice tidy ending for those of you who like such things, animal population fluctuations often aren't fully understood, though folks who make a living from studying such things continue to get better every day. For those of us across rural Alaska, we can continue to hope and pray for solid populations of the things we like to line our freezers with, so we can continue to do just that. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.